Welcome back to AEIOU, a podcast about Austria. This is Andrew, your host. In the last episode, we left off with the end of the Holy Roman Empire. The final dissolution of this thousand-year-old institution was a direct result of Austria's loss to Napoleonic France at the Battle of Austerlitz. Napoleon established a buffer state of German-speaking territories, called the Confederation of the Rhine, and Austria and Prussia began to chart separate courses from one another in terms of their share of power in German-speaking Central Europe. As we noted, in 1804, the final Holy Roman Emperor, Francis II, had declared himself Emperor of Austria, based on an agreement with Napoleon that both men would be acknowledged as emperors, but neither would claim the extensive dominion that the Holy Roman Empire had. This was not the end of Francis's conflicts with Napoleon, however. Austria had sat out the War of the Fourth Coalition, in which France defeated Prussia, Russia, Sweden, and the United Kingdom, resulting in Napoleon's so-called continental system. According to this system, France applied an embargo against Britain with the intention of both neutralizing Britain as a threat and making France itself the hegemonic economic power on the European continent. Having been defeated by France, Austria had little choice but to participate in the embargo. However, in 1807, Napoleon took a wrong step and went to war in Spain and Portugal. At issue was Portugal's refusal to participate in the embargo on Britain. The details of the so-called Peninsular War don't concern us much here in this podcast about Austria, except to say that the war on the Iberian Peninsula greatly weakened France militarily. The French emperor was required to redeploy more than 100,000 men from Central Europe into Spain. With Napoleon's position in Central Europe cut in half, Austria's foreign minister, Count Stadion, believed the time was ripe to strike and regain lost territory by attacking France. However, Austria lacked German allies. The Confederation of the Rhine was loyal to Napoleon, and Prussia decided against going to war this time around. Nevertheless, despite the blockade, the British came through with extensive loans to Austria for rearming, totaling more than £1 million. Although they would not agree to fight Napoleon directly in Central Europe, the British agreed to restart their fight in Spain. On April 10, 1809, Austria invaded Bavaria, and the War of the Fifth Coalition began. The war lasted for 6 months, and the result was disastrous for Austria. Not only did Austria and its coalition partners lose, but Austria was forced to cede territory in virtually every direction. Austria ceded parts of Galicia to Russia and to the Duchy of Warsaw, which was a client state in Poland that Napoleon had created 2 years earlier. In addition, Austria was forced to cede to France much of its territory on the Adriatic coast in what is today Croatia and Slovenia. The result was that the Habsburg monarchy was now landlocked. Finally, and most painfully, the Habsburgs had to cede territories they had controlled for centuries when Bavaria took the province of Salzburg and Saxony took parts of Bohemia. This point was the lowest that Austria would reach during the whole conflict with revolutionary and Napoleonic France. To add insult to injury, to make legitimate his growing empire, Napoleon now sought to divorce his wife Josephine and marry into one of the royal houses of Europe. Fearful that the French emperor would marry into the Russian dynastic house, the Romanov family, Emperor Francis married off to Napoleon his own daughter, Marie Louise, in 1810. The son of Maria Louise and Napoleon, named Napoleon II, was born the following year, his father being permanently deposed in 1815. Napoleon II never realized his own imperial ambitions and died young, at the age of 21, of an illness. But of course, the history doesn't end there. As you might be aware, in 1812, Napoleon invaded Russia, and like Hitler more than 100 years later, Napoleon's road to defeat truly began then. By 1813, Napoleon was sufficiently weakened that a new coalition war could begin to knock him out permanently. For the first few months of the War of the Sixth Coalition, Austria sat on the sidelines. However, in the early summer, an armistice was agreed to so that both sides in the war could recover from their substantial losses. During that summer, Austria rejoined its allies of Russia, Prussia, and Sweden to deliver the final blow to France. Austrian forces were led in part by Field Marshal Joseph Radetzky, of whom we will hear more later. It took until the subsequent march to finally defeat Napoleon. Paris fell on March 31st, and Napoleon went into exile on Elba, a small island in the Mediterranean. For 100 days in 1815, it appeared Napoleon might make a return, but he was finally defeated at Waterloo on June 18, 1815. Europe was drastically changed from what it had been before the French Revolution, now more than 25 years earlier. It remained for the victors against France to determine how this changed continent would be managed going forward. The quarter century since 1789 had been tumultuous, and no one wanted anything ever again like the decade of war that had just passed. The solution was devised at the Congress of Vienna, which met in Austria's capital intermittently for nearly a year beginning in 1814. The Congress was the brainchild of Prince Clemens von Metternich, Emperor Francis's foreign minister and a man who would play an outsized role in the coming decades of Austrian history. The idea of the Congress was one of direct diplomacy, rather than diplomacy being carried out by the traditional method of one-on-one meetings and letters sent by mail. A meeting of all parties involved in the previous conflicts would take place, and the issues at hand would be debated until an agreement was reached. While the idea seems commonplace today, it was revolutionary for its time. Along with Austria, which was represented by Metternich, the participants at the Congress of Vienna were the United Kingdom, Russia, Prussia, and France. These five countries would come to be called the Great Powers, and they led the process in Vienna, with France playing a subordinate role, being on the losing side in the recent wars. However, virtually every other country in Europe also participated, including Spain, Portugal, the Netherlands, Switzerland, Sweden, Denmark, and multiple Italian and German-speaking states. Whole podcasts could be dedicated just to the Congress of Vienna and the negotiations and intrigues that went on in the Austrian capital. Rather than weigh down this episode with all of the details, we'll look at the settlement in broad terms with a focus on what the peace meant for Austria. We'll begin with the gains of Austria's allies. Britain's gains were primarily colonial, with the United Kingdom obtaining colonies in the Caribbean, South Africa, and Ceylon, which is now called Sri Lanka. Russia received Poland and Finland as its reward. Prussia was among the biggest winners. It gained so much territory that, when the German Empire was declared 50 years later, Prussian territory would make up nearly two-thirds of all the land in the empire. Austria's gains were more modest. On the one hand, previously Austrian holdings were now cobbled into the United Kingdom of the Netherlands, which was a new creation from the Congress of Vienna. On the other hand, Austria received back the other land it had lost earlier. It also received the northern Italian territory of Lombardy, Venetia, and additional Adriatic territory in Dalmatia. Perhaps most importantly for this podcast, a new German confederation was created at the Congress of Vienna. This confederation of 39 German-speaking states included both Austria and Prussia, as well as Bavaria, Saxony, and other former Napoleonic allies. We should be clear about one point: this was not a new state in Europe. Rather, as its name suggests, it was a confederation so that the central power, such as it existed at all, was very weak. There was a parliament of sort, seated at Frankfurt, where the constituent states of the confederation were represented roughly on the basis of population. Austria had four seats, as did Prussia, Bavaria, Saxony, Hanover, and Württemberg. The rest had three, two, or one seat. In addition, within the parliament, there was an inner council of 17 seats, with the 11 largest states each having a seat and the remaining states sharing seats. In theory, the confederation was a way for the German states to cooperate with each other and benefit from unity. In reality, it became a way for Austria and Prussia to fight over hegemony within the confederation. Because unanimous voting was required to get anything of real consequence done, the confederation was a weak institution in general. Its primary purpose was cooperative defense of German-speaking Europe, and it did manage at the very least to keep Germans out of wars for a couple of decades. The greatest accomplishment was likely the establishment of a customs union, which extended economic benefits to the member states, in addition to the defensive arrangements the Confederation provided. In being weak militarily, the German Confederation played a key role in the balance of power that Metternich had sought to create at the Congress of Vienna. At least for the short term, the great powers of Europe would keep one another in check, minimize their conflicts with one another, and allow one another to pursue their internal affairs and colonial goals somewhat freely. Since Prussia and Austria were also great powers, they participated in this balance of power in addition to being members of the German Confederation. In this way, Russia, the United Kingdom, and France participated in conflicts far more than Austria and Prussia did during the three decades between Napoleon's fall and the revolutionary year of 1848. Of course, this does not mean that everything was quiet in Austria for those three decades. There was a certain stability at the head of the government. The emperor remained Francis II until 1835. Metternich remained the foreign minister and continued to hold continental congresses for conflict resolution. In 1821, Metternich acceded to the office of Chancellor, the equivalent of Prime Minister. Metternich also exercised his power as a major seat holder within the German Confederation, and it was within this milieu that he had the most significant influence on internal affairs in Austria. This part of our story starts with a murder, but we need to back up a little bit to fully understand who was murdered and by whom, as well as the long-term results. Around the time of the final defeat of Napoleon, student associations began to emerge around German-speaking Europe. These groups were called Burschenschaften. They tended to arise as groups in which young men could participate in athletics or political debate. In reality, they became groups in which young men spread ideas about liberalism and nationalism to the aggravation of the conservative powers that were. In this regard, men like Metternich were the enemy of the Burschenschaften. The Burschenschaften were liberals and increasingly nationalistic, including pressing for a unified German state instead of a weaker confederation. In contrast, Metternich was a conservative and generally an enemy of nationalism, instead being committed to the international order he was in the process of creating. Among the more prominent enemies of the German students was August von Kotzebue, a dramatist of some renown. He was also a vocal critic of liberalism and nationalism. When he moved to Mannheim, in the Grand Duchy of Baden, Kotzebue had so evoked the wrath of the students that one sought to kill him. The assassin, whose name was Karl Ludwig Sand, was a veteran of the Battle of Waterloo and a theology student at the University of Jena. On March 23, 1819, Sand came to the house of Kotzebue in the late afternoon, pronounced him a traitor to the fatherland, and stabbed him repeatedly. He then fled into the street, where he attempted suicide by stabbing himself several times. He was unsuccessful and was executed the following year. Metternich and his conservative allies reacted quickly to the assassination, promulgating from the city of Karlsbad in Bohemia the so-called Karlsbad Decrees. In addition to banning the Burschenschaften and placing limits on other student activities and the universities generally, an office of censorship was established to limit what went into print and, it was hoped, prevent future acts of violence from occurring. Finally, an investigating committee was created as the body tasked with policing the decrees on student and press activities. Political police would emerge under Metternich that would play a significant role in the decades to come. Thus did Austria enter the 1820s and 30s. They are today considered decades of tremendous stability. The 1840s would be significantly less so. We'll end there for this week. Thanks for listening.